our goals are very closely aligned as far as wanting to see people's property rights respected and to see a more just process for property owners. This has been a hot issue in other states around the country, and everywhere that reform has gone forward, it has done so in a bipartisan fashion. We think lots of people will take notice that two organizations that they at least regard as being very different in their places on the political or ideological spectrum, nevertheless are in total agreement on this issue. We think that people take notice of that and give a stronger look to the recommended reforms that we're suggesting, because obviously if those on different points of the spectrum can agree, then there may be something to what we're agreeing on.
Asset forfeiture laws in Illinois are complex because there are different categories of crime and different kinds of assets. What do you think needs to happen?
For all forfeitures, we need to make sure if we're taking away property permanently on the premise that a crime has occurred and that property was either used in the crime or was derived from the crime, we have to be sure that there was, in fact, a crime, which means somebody was convicted. Right now, not only does that not have to happen, there doesn't even have to be a charge or even an arrest in order for somebody's property not just to be seized by the police, but to be permanently forfeited over to the state of Illinois, never to be seen by that person again. The very first step in having a fair process is making sure that if we're taking away property based on a crime, that there is a crime.
You are also suggesting a change in the standard of proof. How do we know whether an asset was used in commission of a crime or not? And what should be the appropriate standard of proof?
Used in the commission of a crime is, I think, you know, a factual inquiry, as is whether it was derived from the commission of a crime. If the crime, for instance, is possession of cocaine with intent to deliver, they caught somebody in a car with a trunk full of cocaine, well, I don't think there's much of a factual inquiry to be made that that vehicle was in fact used in possessing that cocaine, which the person was proven beyond a reasonable doubt to have the intent to deliver. No problem, forfeit the vehicle. But they don't have to do that now. They put the cart before the horse and just take the vehicle. Sometimes they don't even prosecute the person.
There are also different standards, though. Even if the person has the wherewithal to file all the paperwork needed to contest the issue, there's the preponderance of evidence, there's beyond a reasonable doubt. What's the standard that ought to be used if prosecutors are trying to say this asset connects to a crime?
What we've recommended in our report is that the standard be raised to clear and convincing evidence. The standards vary among the different statutes now, but they are all either preponderance of the evidence or, in the case of the drug statute, probable cause, which is unconscionably low for a standard of proof in a court proceeding. That's an appropriate standard for an arrest or for a seizure, not for a judgment after a on the merits of a case after trial. But that's all they have to prove in a drug case. We think clear and convincing evidence is a much more appropriate standard. It's not as high as the criminal standard of beyond a reasonable doubt, but it is not so insanely low as to stack the deck against the property owner and in favor of the government, which is what the current standard operates to do.
Due process is also stacked against people. How should that change?
Well, you know, you asked about the standard of proof, but the burden of proof needs to be in the appropriate place, and that is on the government. In any criminal prosecution, in any civil lawsuit, the plaintiff, the moving party that brought the suit or brought the prosecution, always has the burden of proving their case. But that's not how it works in forfeiture. If government is able to clear the initial probable cause hearing, then essentially it's on the property owner to prove his or her innocence, to show a negative. Not only did I not engage in criminal activity. I didn't know about criminal activity, but I couldn't possibly have known about criminal activity. This is what they're asked to prove, just in order to keep the property or to get back the property that has been taken away from them, and that is contrary to the American system of justice. The government needs to have the burden of proving its case. Also, we shouldn't require the property owner to post a cost bond just for the privilege of having his or her day in court to contest the forfeiture. Illinois law currently requires that a person put up a bond equal to 10% of the value of the property that they're seeking to get back, or just forfeit it by default. And even if they go through the entire process and win the case and the court says you're entitled to get your property back, the clerk of the court keeps 10% of that cost bond that you had to post for your trouble. This is just setting an artificial financial bar to keep people out of the courthouse and keep more of the property with the agency that seized it. So that should be done away with.
Your report indicates that in the last 10 years between state and federal asset forfeitures in the state of Illinois, about $700 million in property and assets have been taken away from people. In states that have passed changes, what has happened to the level of forfeitures?
A lot of the reforms that have been enacted in other states have been enacted in the last year or two, so I'm not sure. I would mention that everywhere that this debate has taken place, law enforcement has been extremely resistant and opposed to any proposed reform, big or small. And in fact, one of the most sweeping and comprehensive reforms that was passed was done in the state of New Mexico, you know, requiring a criminal conviction. The forfeiture proceeding is in the criminal court. The standard of proof was raised to clear and convincing evidence. The financial incentives were taken away. And still, the reports coming out of New Mexico since the passage of that law are troubling insofar as they indicate that some of the law enforcement agencies are continuing the practices that they were doing before the passage of the reform and essentially ignoring the new law that the legislature down there passed. So that's very troubling that even in places where they've managed to pass a reform, law enforcement has been has had to be dragged along with it.
How long does it typically take in states where this has been waged for something to change?
In New Mexico, it happened very quickly. But in other states, like in the state of Pennsylvania, it's been reported on for years that the city of Philadelphia is one of the worst places for abuse of civil asset forfeiture, where it's used on a wide scale and mainly used to take small amounts of money or property from poor people. So despite all the documented problems there, though, they've been fighting about it for years and years, and I think there was some legislation passed recently, but it was a shell of what New Mexico or other states have passed. You know, I think New Mexico, there was kind of a perfect storm where there was somewhat of a scandal, and their law enforcement opponents might have been caught asleep at the switch. In other places, they've been able to fend off any kind of reform at all for years.
Is Illinois more like Pennsylvania or New Mexico, in your viewpoint?
We'll find out, but the early indications are not promising as far as law enforcement's willingness to negotiate on this and acknowledge that there's a problem. There was a very modest bill proposed there was a hearing in the Senate last year. The only thing the bill would have done would have been to raise the standard of proof in a trial of a forfeiture case under the Drug Asset Forfeiture Procedure Act, so not any of the other statutes, from probable cause to clear and convincing evidence. The representative of the State's Attorneys Association characterized the bill as ending civil asset forfeiture as we know it, and, you know, every single police group and every single prosecutor's group filed slips in opposition to the bill, and it didn't get out of committee. So that was a very modest and incremental reform, and still they treated it like it was the end of the world. So I don't expect them to go along easily with reform. I think they will fight.